Well, if you have your Bibles, turn to Acts chapter 16. Acts chapter 16. We're continuing our lesson series we're calling Epic, that there's a story behind every hero. Every hero has a story. And the hero we're looking at this morning, and I hope that you've been in the life of Lydia this week. I hope that you've received that email early in the week and you've been thinking about Lydia and her message to us, her testimony, her witness to us through the centuries. And what we're looking at is this idea of hospitality. And I think Lydia is the perfect example of what Christian hospitality should be. At its very best, this is what Christian hospitality would look like. But to start our sermon this morning, I want to share with you a story of the 17 camels. How many of you ever heard the story of the 17 camels? Rhonda and me. This is perfect. Because you don't know the answer to this. All right, the story goes like this, and this is an old story. And I don't know how well you can see this because of the glare, but this here is a camel. Can you see it? Kaylee, thank you for drawing my camel, because I couldn't have done that. And the story goes like this. There was a father who passed away, and he left his 17 camels to his three kids. And the first kid, being the firstborn and the loudest mouth, decided that that kid should get half the camels, okay? You got it? He said, then the other kid, you know, the one that thinks they know everything, should get a sixth of the camels. Am I telling this right? We got it so far? Okay. And then the other kid should get a ninth of the camels. Now, do you see a problem here? There's 17 camels. Can't divide 17 by 2, can't divide 17 by 6, and you certainly can't divide 17 by 9. So we have a problem here, and the only answer is to what? Start hacking up camels. And let's not do that, okay? Nobody wants half a camel. By the way, if we wanted a modern-day counterpart, think of these as classic cars. A father died with 17 classic cars, each worth, oh, I don't know, let's say $100,000. Now are you more interested? Joe just got interested. He's thinking, you're not cutting up that classic car so I can have my three-fifths. So I gave this problem to three of our brightest students. Are you three of our brightest students, or did I ask the wrong? And I gave them, instead of camels, I gave them, what did I give you guys? You've got Tootsie Pops, and there were 17 of them, correct? And your task was to divide those 17 Tootsie Roll Pops between the three of you. How did you do? How many Tootsie Roll Pops did you get? You have 5, and Jackson has?
6.
And so they failed. You failed miserably. Now, Gentry, what's the problem here? Why can't you guys divide these evenly?
Because it's not an even number. Unless you do like
0.5 or something. Oh. Okay, you are right. I said you cannot. You could not cut up the lollipops. And so she says it's like 0.5 or something to make it all equitable. Hannah, did y'all think of anything maybe creative you could do? What do you think, Jackson? Okay, Jackson says, let's divide them up by colors. So all the red camels go over here, and all the blue camels. See, we're talking about camels. We all have lollipops. Anything else you came up with? No? Did you decide to, you started out, what was your first way of solving this, Jackson? What did you decide to do? Everybody each take one lollipop. And then what happened? You still had stuff left over. Okay. Now, let me see if I can get somebody to help us. I think there's somebody in the audience who can help you. Grayson, you want to come up here? Now, Grayson has in his possession one lollipop. Now, Grayson, I want to ask you this question. Would you be willing to share your lollipop with these three people?
Yes.
Okay, he says yes. And so now if I give you an extra lollipop, what happens? Gentry's very excited because she says there are now 18 lollipops and we can divide by 3. Okay, so Gentry, I'm just going to ask you, since you're the one who's talking the most, come this way. You guys stay over there. Don't eat any lollipops yet. Now, Gentry, let's look at this problem. We now have not 17, but we have 18 camels, thanks to Grayson and his camel. Now, if we divide 18 by 2, what do we get?
9.
You got it? 18 by 6. We divide 18 by 6, we get?
3.
Very good. And now we get 18 by 9, we get what? 2. All right. Did I do this wrong? It's a third, isn't it, Rhonda? It is a third. I'm sorry. Okay. Here we go. A third. I got it now. So it's 6. There we go. Okay. Now the magic is about to happen. Are you ready? So we have 9, 6, and 2. Now, Gentry, without any help from me, I want you to add those three numbers together.
17.
Whoa, you did that in your head. You didn't even take off your shoes like I did. Wait a minute. We have 17 camels now. What do we do with the extra camel? Grayson gets to take it home. That's the story of the 17 camels. Now, what didn't work out before works out perfectly evenly now, doesn't it? So what did we need? We needed an extra camel. But did you have to give up that camel, Grayson? You get to go home with it. All right, so take your camels or your lollipops, as it were, and do with them as you please. That's the story of the 18 camels. Don't applaud. It's not trickery. It's not a magic trick. But let's do applaud for these kiddos right here for coming up. Now, you can't stay there the whole time, guys. You got to go back to your seats because y'all are way cuter than I am. That's it. Half, third, and a ninth, if you want to retell that story sometime. Is that weird? Does that make your brain itch a little bit? A problem that seemed to have no solution to it needed one extra camel, but that camel wasn't then consumed. That camel didn't get taken. That camel was given right back in the story, in the old proverb. It's the wisest woman of the tribe who offers her camel, and they find the solution. Well, this morning we find a wonderful solution to how we bring people to Christ. And it's found actually in the book of Acts, in Acts 16. And I told you to turn there, but I want you to keep your thumb there, and then we're going to go to Philippians 1. And here's why. Philippians 16 is the story of the birth of the church in Philippi. But in Philippians 1, we get a letter written to these people that we're going to read about this morning, we're going to study this morning, 10 years later. And so we get to see the love and affection that Paul has for these folks who are first introduced to Christ in Acts 16. So here's Philippians 1, verse 3. And I want you to hear the joy, the love, the excitement, the affection that Paul has for these people. I thank my God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. It's right for me to feel this way about all of you, since I have you in my heart. And whether I'm in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you share in God's grace with me. God can testify how I long for all of you with the affection of Christ Jesus. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in the knowledge and depth of insight, and that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. The question I asked in our study this week was, can you think of someone you would want to receive that prayer from? I've actually received this prayer from somebody. It's my preacher when I was growing up. When he wishes you happy birthday or he sends you an encouragement card, he always says, Philippians 1, 3 through 8. To remind you of just how much he loves you. And it's a wonderful way to receive some love and affection. But can you imagine getting this letter and reading it? Lydia is one of the people that read this letter and thought, that's so Paul. We're going to talk about some of the other people who would have received that letter and heard the same thing. But the joy that Paul has is like the joy that we read that's all over the Gospel of Luke. Do you remember that last week we looked at all the places in Luke where we read about joy? In Philippians, in 1:4, he prays with joy. In 1:18, he rejoices that Christ is proclaimed. In 1:25, he says, keep working for the Philippians' joy. In 2:2, he asks the Philippians to complete his joy. In 2:17 and 18, he's glad and rejoices with them. In 2:28, he sends Epaphroditus that the Philippians might rejoice. In 29, he tells the Philippians to receive Epaphroditus with joy. In 3:1, he tells the Philippians to rejoice with joy. In 4:1, he tells them that they are his joy. And then in 4:4, you remember this, he says it twice, rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. And in 4:10, he rejoiced in the Lord at the Philippians' concern for him. And so one of those people hearing that message, reflecting back on those first days in Philippi, was this lady named Lydia. And in Acts chapter 16, I want you to see what Lydia has to offer to this situation. We'll start in verse 11 of chapter 16. From Troas, we put out to sea and sailed straight for Samothrace, and the next day we went to Neapolis. From there, we traveled to Philippi, a Roman colony and the leading city of the district of Macedonia. I should stop here and say, remember that Paul had gotten what we call the Macedonian call, this vision, this dream of a man calling him to Macedonia that he wants to hear about Jesus. So this is Paul being true to that call. And we stayed there several days. On the Sabbath, we went outside the city gate to the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. We sat down and began to speak to the women who had gathered here. There. One of these listening was a woman from the city of Thyatira named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth. She was a worshiper of God. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. When she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. If you consider me a believer in the Lord, she said, come and stay at my house. And she persuaded us. Does that account sound a little bit like a letter we read earlier today? Does that sound a little bit like the heart of one who just put on Christ, who says, my heart is full. I'm so excited for all that God has done for me. And here's my prayer that everyone would know about it, that every seat in every church would be full so that other people could come to the knowledge of Jesus Christ. Who's this Lydia? Well, culturally, in her society, she's an insider. She's what we might say, she's kind of a big deal. She's made a lot of money. She's done well for herself. She's a dealer in purple cloth. And that could be either purple textiles, like actual cloth that's been dyed purple, or in purple dye. Thyatira was known. This was a big city. This is a city where the fashion industry would kind of revolve around. So kind of like, I don't know, I need to ask other people this. Maybe New York, Paris, Milan. I can only think that because for me, it's Academy, Walmart, Cabela's. You know, that's where my fashion industry really resides. And if you can't buy batteries where you buy your clothes, I'm not really interested. And but Lydia was part of this larger commerce, this larger trade, and she was really good at her job. She dealt in a coveted consumer good. And so it would have made her an insider. What we know, or what we think here, is that this is one house that she has. And think about the lodging that Lydia invites them to. So she has a place in Thyatira and a place in Philippi. And yet it's large enough, not just only to receive guests, but what we're going to find is that this home is big enough to receive the brothers, as Paul will talk about at the end of 16, if you read the whole chapter. So culturally, societally, where her place, if she were, she would be on the Chamber of Commerce. Lydia would be somebody who sponsors a golf hole at a charity event. Can I put that in more modern day? She's got some means. And yet, spiritually, Lydia's an outsider. Did you catch it? She is what's termed a worshiper of God. Now you go, Jeff, that sounds pretty good. But it's a technical term that's used in Acts, and it's for a Gentile who's adopted elements of the Jewish belief and practice, but they're not a full convert. They haven't fully converted. And so when it comes to her spiritual community, she's not a big deal. She's not an insider. She's not a mover and shaker. In fact, she's really on the outside. She's on the outskirts. It's why we don't find, Paul doesn't find her in the synagogue, does he? He finds her by a river. It's also an interesting question of why Paul is not in a synagogue, because that's where Paul always started, didn't he? In every city that he went to. And so here's Paul on the outskirts of town, where he finds a prayer gathering. And he comes to this outsider, and he shares with her the message of Jesus Christ. And what we know is that because Lydia was welcomed by Christ, Lydia welcomed others. And that's really the whole crux of the matter this morning. If you've been welcomed to the table by Christ, then your table ought to be open to other people. If Christ has found a home for you, if you found a home in Christ, then your home ought to be open to other people who are searching and looking and in need. Because if we want to follow Jesus, then we're going to do the things that Jesus did. So often we say if we're going to follow Jesus, then we're going to believe the things that Jesus believed. I'm not telling you that that's not true, but it's more than just a mental exercise. It's more than just admitting that, yes, Jesus is right. Jesus knows he's right. He doesn't need you to agree with him. He needs you to obey him. He needs you to follow him. And there's something about hospitality. Lydia's response here, her response to Christ, her response to these missionaries, to these apostles, to those who've been sent with a message, is what Christian hospitality is. And Christian hospitality sometimes surprises us. Surprises us. A good friend of mine by the name of Doug Lally, he's a minister in Kentucky, and he wrote this on his Facebook page this week. I want to share it with you. He says, in 30 years of being a minister, I've seen a lot of things and heard a lot of tragic stories. I've handed money to people knowing full well that the yarn they had just spun was exaggerated at best and 100% false at worst. But for the sake of those who really do need help, I and many people I know keep digging into our pockets and wallets and trusting that somehow God will bless the gesture in their lives. I expected what had happened today to be just like that. A man I'd never seen tracked me down at our church building and wanted to talk in private for a minute. That's how those conversations always start, by the way. I immediately began thinking about how much money I had on me and how much of a story I was going to have to hear. Shooting straight with you, I didn't feel like hearing a story. It started out with a question: does your church have a food pantry? Then, as I internally judged between sincerity and a con artist, I listened to this man tell me how our church, had helped him out 8 or 9 years ago when he was in a tough spot. We helped him once. And he wants more, is what I was thinking. He said that things had been rough, got him through. And as he pulled out his wallet, he wanted to pay us back. He opened it and handed it to me. Everything that was in his wallet, $21. Please help someone else like I was then, if you can. My demeanor changed a bit. I can count on my hand how many times this has happened. It went exactly the opposite direction from what I expected, and my cynical heart healed just a little bit. And it only cost $21. In John 13, Jesus humbles himself, truly humbles himself. He gets down and takes the job of a servant, of a lowly servant, and he washes his disciples' feet. And the great lesson here is what? In verse 14, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I've set an example that you should do as I've done for you. He didn't say that you would agree that it's right and good that I did this. He says, if you really do believe that, then you'll go and do this. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you know them. If you agree with them. Does he say that? He says, you will be blessed if you do them. What I want you to know about Christian hospitality is if you want to shock the world, you want to surprise the world, live like Lydia. Not only does Christian hospitality surprise us and inspires us. Luke, I'm going to need your help for this part. You don't have to do any math, don't worry. I know that Oklahoma education sometimes skimps on things like that. I was at a pool party a few days ago, and our neighborhood decided, our pool was delayed in opening this summer, and so we decided to have a big party, invite everybody in our neighborhood, and they got some people to sponsor Cane's chicken tenders, you know, and they said, we need some other things, and I was on it. My ears perked up, and I said, the Lake City Church of Christ, located at 280 Indian Creek Drive, would love to supply you with all the watermelon you need. And how about small bottles of water and any tables and coolers and ice, more ice than you can imagine. We can just, you know, as much as you need. And so the organizer of the party said, that would be great. And she said, I'll be sure. And no, she said, if you want to bring a banner so that they know that it was Lake Cities that donated that, that's fine. And I didn't. I just brought the coolers that said Lake Cities Church of Christ. And it said, if you're eating this watermelon, I don't know, I thought I'd have something clever there to say, like, Jesus wants you to spit out the seeds. I don't know, something. And I didn't come up with anything. But here's all these people, and they're eating watermelon, we're eating chicken, and we're swimming, and we're having a great time. And this lady comes up to me, and she goes, Lake Cities Church of Christ, well, what's your connection there? And I, you know, said, well, ma'am, I don't think I need to tell you. I'm the senior minister there, which meant nothing to her. Because she says, oh, is that Luke's church? And I said, you stop it right now. I said, Luke who? I've never heard of a Luke. Do you mean the Gospel of Luke or, you know, something like that? And she says, no, Luke Andrus. She said, I work for the district. And then we started to have this conversation about teen life. Now, Luke, you did a much better job at explaining this than I can. Tell the folks what teen life is.
Yeah. So teen life is a new program where I work over in Byron Nelson, so I go to the high school once a week for 8 weeks. And what it is, it's not therapy, it's not counseling. I'm just a facilitator of conversation. So we'll have an activity to do, and then we'll talk about it. And basically, it's to help them develop personality skills that they might not have. It gives them an opportunity to talk about things that have happened in their life. But in no way am I trying to correct this. Opportunity to reach out to the high schools and kids who are hurting and going through a lot of stuff, just to be there to give advice or just to listen.
Go sit down. So I said, yeah, absolutely right. It's Luke's church. Absolutely. And she began to describe to me, she said, I have to be there as I'm kind of the, if anybody, you know, talks about some really serious stuff, like if anybody's suicidal or if they're, you know, going through some abuse or anything, she said, that's when I step in. So she's kind of, I don't know, kind of like a social worker that oversees that. And it was wonderful. It surprised me. I was not expecting to hear that while in my swim trunks, you know, eating chicken. It surprises us, right? It surprises us to find that there's a woman who's ready to open up her home. And Jesus later in John 13, he says, a new commandment I give to you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And then he says, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. If you love one another, if you do the things, if you open up places at the table, if you go and have hard conversations with kids that are struggling, people are going to know that you're my disciples. Yes, if you offer a few plates of cold cut up watermelon, people are going to know who you are when you do it in my name. Brennan Manning, who's a Christian author that I enjoy reading, he says, I believe the difference in the American church is not between conservatives and liberals, fundamentalists and charismatics, nor between Republicans and Democrats. The real difference is between the aware and the unaware. When somebody is aware of that love, that same love that the Father has for Jesus, that person is spontaneously grateful. Cries of thankfulness become the dominant characteristic of the interior life, and the byproduct of that gratitude is joy. That sound like a few letters we've read today? First from Italy, and then one from a Roman jail cell written to the Philippians. Christian hospitality surprises us, it inspires us, but it also requires us. It requires us. William Ury, that's a great name, isn't it? He is a cultural anthropologist and a conflict negotiator. He's a mediator. Now, when I say that, you think dispute resolutions and maybe arbitration of million-dollar contracts, way, way beyond that. He's worked in places like Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, Chechnya, South Africa, in some of the biggest geopolitical hornet's nests, is the best way I could say it, that it, where it looked like there could be no reconciliation. Northern Africa, Northern Ireland, thank you. And so he's a Harvard trained, and he's a professor there at Harvard, and they began to ask this question among other mediators and anthropologists. They began to ask the question, what could we do about Middle East peace? Yeah, there's a simple problem to try to solve, right? And what William came up with was this idea that the people of the Middle East, all the people of the Middle East, have the same origin story. Think about this for a moment. What do they all share in common? What do we all share in common? Christians, Jews, and Muslims. Abraham. And we sing Father Abraham, but many sons of Father Abraham. Well, it's a true story that 4,000 years ago, God called Abraham to go from one place to another. And so this anthropologist thought, what if we did like Abraham and we walked? What if we, in fact, retraced the path of Abraham? I want to show you the, I don't know how, you can't see that well at all, can you? This could be anything. This could be the best restaurants in Roanoke, and you wouldn't know. But it starts up in Haran, Urfa, Aleppo, Damascus, goes through some major cities. You can see Jericho there, winds up in Hebron. But what I really want you to notice is the countries that it walks through. Do you see on there? I'm going to give you some. Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia. You know, nice places, right? Places that you'd feel comfortable walking through. But 12 years ago, this group of anthropologists thought, let's retrace the steps of Abraham. Takes 700 miles, by the way, to walk that. And here's some of the scenes. Here's some of the people that they met along the way. Gorgeous vistas. Isn't that beautiful? Here's what they found along the way, that there's a tradition of hospitality in those lands. I don't know what that looks like, a rice cake with vegetables in it, you know, like a bundt cake that she made, but I'm sure it's delicious. And then let's see some others here. Beautiful Syrian family here. Next. I guess they realized that the Americans liked French fries and even offered French fries. But here's what I found fascinating. He said everywhere that they experienced hospitality, it was said with this phrase, in the name of Father Ibrahim, that's how they say Abraham, in the name of Father Ibrahim, I offer you this meal or a place to stay, or this cup of tea. And so what happened was this kind of became a movement, this Abraham path. People came and started to walk this path. And along the path, they met a lot of these same people. And then as people knew that more and more, not just Americans, but people from all over the globe were coming, it created kind of a microeconomy. And I want you to hear William tell it. And oh, by the way, I wanted to show you a picture from the original Abraham path. Much more difficult. Do you see that? Nobody wants to walk that path, do they? When we share Christ with the world, in order to do that in this culture, in all of our global culture, we are going to have to share our hospitality. Mark 9:41, I tell you the truth, anyone who gives a cup of water in my name because you belong to Christ will certainly not lose his reward. In Luke 19, Jesus very famously said to Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house for dinner. I must stay at your house today, Zacchaeus. Or in Revelation 3, here I am. Behold, I stand at the door and knock, and if anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me. And in our story in Acts 16, the Lord did what? He opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. And when she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. If you consider me a believer in the Lord, she said, come and stay at my house. And she persuaded us. I'm praying for you, church, that the Lord would do the same for us today, that he would open our hearts so that he could open our homes, that we would build relationships that lead to the greatest relationship, that in the name of Father Abraham, we would offer cut up watermelon, little cups of water, time to listen, $21, a simple meal, or maybe even just one camel. I'm praying that God would use us as an instrument to open up a way, a path that people can walk to know him. That's our prayer this morning. If you need to respond to that message, I bet you need to respond out there more than you need to respond in here. But if you need to confess sin or be baptized, we want you to do that. If you need someone to pray over you and for you, our elders and wives will be in the back to receive you. Whatever you need, let's respond as we stand and sing.